for November 15th, 2016. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information out there. Social media is a great way to find what everybody's knee-jerk reaction to things is.
It's a great place to be able to lay your soul bare.
Every paragraph. Here you go. Here's what I think.
And make sure that, you know, just have, you know, if you really feel strongly about something, maybe that's a good place to put it.
Yep. You know what's really great, though, is history. Today, November 15th, is the 30th anniversary of my favorite album, The Beastie Boys' License to Ill.
Favorite album?
My favorite album. This is the album that I will listen to from beginning to end.
Favorite album?
Favorite album.
What grade were you in?
Let's see. 30 years ago, I would have been 11. This is a week before I turned 12.
This means a lot.
I can see
there were a lot of great albums during this period of time, and License to Ill was the obviously a very good one.
I love it.
Oh, I can imagine.
We were at a party, a retirement party last year, and there were three of us of a middle age, and we all stood up and screamed every word of this album at this retirement party.
You were drinking Brass Monkey?
Well, there was that. Great album. I love it. 30th anniversary. I'm going to celebrate today. There's
you
no
were
doubt.
Fighting for your right to party.
There is no question. I am going to party because I don't have to fight for my right for it anymore because I'm in my middle age now. I don't know. I know that music is attached to nostalgia. This is definitely attached to that time in my life.
Well, the Beastie Boys are a lot of fun. And first of all, they had multiple albums that were a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, I like this one.
Sabotage.
Sabotage. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And last night, I got to go to a movie theater from our friends from Fathom Events and see Doctor Who, The Power of the Daleks. This is a Doctor Who episode, which originally aired November 5th, 1966, and was lost since then because in 1966, they did not archive things. They just recorded over stuff because they needed the tape.
Tapes were, I guess, more expensive
at
that time.
Tapes were very rare at the time. And they didn't think anybody would ever want to watch it again.
But they found the audio of this.
They have the audio. They've recreated the audio from all sorts of different sources to get the best audio they could.
Multiple sources?
Yes. They didn't have the audio either.
So they found it on multiple tapes?
Multiple tapes, different people in different parts of the world, because they sent the signal to all different parts of the world.
Wow.
And lots of different people captured different parts of it, but the video has been lost. So what they've done is they've made an animated version of this episode.
Cartoons.
And it's going to be on BBC America on Saturday, November 19th. So if you haven't seen it at Fathom in the theaters last night, this is a great episode. Mm-hmm. This is the first episode from Patrick Troughton, the second Doctor. The story of Doctor Who, for those of you who haven't been listening to the show for the last 2.5 years, the story of Doctor Who is this time traveler who can change into different people when he dies. When one Doctor dies, he suddenly becomes another same person, but different face and different body. This was the brilliant thing that made Doctor Who what it is today. The first Doctor was not going to be able to do it any longer. His mental faculties weren't what they used to be. And they had to decide, what are we going to do? Are we going to shut down this program when this main character is no longer available? And they decided to change actors. Patrick Troughton become the second Doctor, and this is the first time we've actually been able to see that happen.
Well, how wonderful. Now, he's not the only Doctor you saw.
I also went to go see Doctor Strange in the theaters. I liked this movie. I didn't love it as much as I think you loved it when we talked about it last week, but I liked this movie very much. I agree with you wholeheartedly. The thing that was missing is the time that it should have taken for us to really engage with this character and have this character engage with this sorcery that he's learning.
This could have been three different seasons.
I think this could have been a really fun 8 hour miniseries or two different movies, maybe three different movies, mm-hmm. but we had to get to the action of this character.
This is a superhero movie.
This is a superhero movie after all. I liked it very much. I really would have liked to focus on that spirituality of how he became the sorcerer from where he was to where he wound up.
And then, of course, we have the, at the end, we've got two mini trailers.
Two little teasers at the end. So make sure you, if you go see Doctor Strange in the theater, which I do suggest you do, stay around for those two little teasers at the end so we can see the next stories from Marvel.
And now you've revisited the past also this week.
Yeah, my annual viewing of The Jerk happened this year. This is one of my top 10 movies. I love The Jerk. This is Carl Reiner and Steve Martin's masterpiece.
The Steve Martin guy. Who is that guy?
He was absolutely brilliant at this point. This is 1979, The Jerk. We put this on Tuesday night instead of watching TV last week because
there was nothing else on TV
on Tuesday, November 8th. So we watched The Jerk, and I love this movie. It is so tight. It's so funny. It is a silly slapstick comedy. It has a message about being who you are,
about, you know, when you leave, make sure you take the things that are important to you.
That's right. It has a really strong couple of different messages in there.
I'm gonna take this with me.
It's out there, and if you get it, see a doctor and have it cleared up. It's so funny. Carl Reiner is such a hilarious writer. I love all of his work. Steve Martin is one of my favorite comedians of all time.
Bernadette Peters
is in there. It's fantastic. If you haven't seen The Jerk in a couple of decades, you should really look that one up. You got to see some new movies. The first one is Arrival. Tell us about that one.
Arrival has a very nice cast. It has Amy Adams.
All right. Sold.
Sold right there. Okay. It's got Hawkeye in it, of course.
Jeremy Renner. Okay. Yes.
And it's got Forrest Whitaker in it.
Oh, Forrest Whitaker might be in a Star Wars movie in a couple of months.
That's right. I heard he could be a Star Wars character. We just refer to him as that from now on.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is a movie that is a slow burn. And when I say a slow burn, it is a slow, slow movie.
Okay.
So it builds and builds and builds. It is billed as being an intellectual science fiction film. We've got these, I don't know, almond-shaped black things that are showing up all over the world. They're great big spaceships.
They're not obelisks.
Amy Adams' character needs to be able to communicate with these. That's the big story. Mm-hmm. This story, when I say it's a slow burn, it's certainly, you get right into the movie from the beginning. I mean, she's a professor. She shows up at class. Nobody's at class. One of the students says, turn on the TV. They see the almond-shaped black ships all over the world. They call class off, and then the Army comes and picks her up and moves her to Montana to go talk to these things. I really enjoyed this film. This was a film that had me thinking. I can't give away too much of it because if I give away too much, you may not enjoy it as much. This is not probably going to be something that if you want a big superhero, you know, fast moving film,
not an action film.
My children probably would get bored to this.
Okay.
I would say my wife would probably be bored with this. This is truly the slow burn.
Do you put it on the level with Interstellar from last year?
Somewhat. Okay. You know, if I had it on a scale of 1 to 100, I'd say probably 65. Okay. We talked about Contact.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Okay, Contact has got more action than this film does.
Okay.
But I think
that's a very intellectual, slow burn kind of story.
I think at the end of this, you will rethink of what you watched. And just pay attention is a good thing to say. Because there is something very interesting about
it. So do you think you'll watch it again?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe, because since I know the story, mm-hmm. I can go back and revisit it. I've been thinking about it. I certainly didn't think about it like I thought about an Interstellar.
Right.
But, you know, there's something to it. These, you know, Gravity would be a film very that I would put on the same amount where, you know, maybe the science is somewhat right. Maybe the science isn't so much.
Okay.
You're going for the story and the intellectual kind of exercise it gives you to think. So I I recommend this, but with reservations, because I think there will be a lot of people who will find it too slow.
And you also saw an old movie, one of my other favorites, Dr. Strangelove from 1964.
Stanley Kubrick. I had not seen this
film. You have never seen this movie until this week. That's amazing
to me. I may have seen part of it, but I did not sit down and watch it. Peter Sellers obviously is in three different parts of this.
I contest that this is the best acting that Peter Sellers did in any movie. I love the way that he puts these three characters on screen.
This is very 60s, definitely very Cold War-ish.
Yes.
The idea that a gentleman has taken over, basically he's created nuclear Armageddon, sent all the American planes into the Soviet Union to drop bombs. The Soviets shoot down a whole bunch of them, but we got our president talking to the Soviet Prime Minister and also the Soviet leader about, listen, this is a rogue person who did this.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the magic scene where the gentleman with the nuclear bomb between his legs
rides it into the sunset.
There you go.
Love it. I love this movie. I love just about everything Stanley Kubrick did. He is a very distinct standard of director, and this is one of those movies that in a film class you could look at and analyze.
I think
so much of this.
But you could do that with almost any Kubrick film.
Mm-hmm.
And the last part I'll leave with you, I was flipping through DirecTV through their on-demand section, and this is one of the ones I found. So that's kind of all these movies that I have not seen.
It's a long list. There's a huge list of movies that are out there, and some of them are great and some of them are not, and this is one of the classics that I have on DVD still.
Sure.
You mentioned you watched this. I went directly to my DVD cabinet and said, yep, here it is.
One day I'll watch Superman 3. We know it's going to be a great film.
No, we can skip that one. Opening this week, there's some movies that maybe we can really think are going to be classics, and some maybe we can skip. The first one is called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. This is a prequel of the Harry Potter story, sort of.
Harry Potter. So we got J.K. Rowling. Sounds like she wrote this. Now, I read the textbook, the pseudo textbook that she put out.
So this is a textbook that Harry Potter read in the Harry Potter stories.
It is. In fact, they released them, I can't believe, maybe through in between the fifth and seventh book.
Okay.
They released these two textbooks, and you bought them in a little slipcase, and you could read them. And they were interesting. One was of fairy tales, and the other one was The Fantastic Beasts.
Okay.
So, obviously, this will be the biggest film of the week. And this may be one of the biggest films of the year. Harry Potter is very much like Star Wars, just a juggernaut. And my understanding, this may be one of five films.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
People love their Harry Potter and anything connected to Harry Potter.
Well, they've got a great cast. If it's as quality as particularly the later Harry Potter films, it should do very well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what the legs are going to be on this, because Rogue One is coming up in December.
Yes, it is,
and that will be an incredible.
A month from tomorrow.
Think of the serials we have right now. We have Star Wars as a serial, and then we have the movies that are kind of in between those. We have the Marvel universe that's a serial, and we have the Harry Potter serials,
and there's DC too. Chip, don't forget about the DC.
Well, in fact,
we've already forgotten about the DC.
The new Wonder Woman trailer was released, and it looks fantastic. So whatever challenges they've had, it seems like it may have worked its way out for this one.
All right. So if you like Harry Potter, go out and see that one. I am way more excited about The Edge of 17.
This looks excellent.
This is a coming-of-age tale from producer James L. Brooks, who gave us all sorts of great movies in the past, Terms of Endearment.
The Simpsons.
And The Simpsons. Forget about Terms of Endearment. He gave us The Simpsons. James L. Brooks is a brilliant producer. I have high expectations for this movie. The trailer looks awesome. Woody Harrelson.
We got Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson is a great actor. I did not know that when he was on Cheers. I did not know how great an actor he was.
The trailer that shows him reading
the inappropriate text that he accidentally gets from his student is hilarious.
It's a run-on sentence. You can work on your run-on.
It's great. I don't generally like teachers and students movies because the teachers are usually presented as dummies. This seems to do it right for me, and I am excited about The Edge of 17. The other one that you found is called The Best Worst Thing That Ever Could Have Happened. It's a documentary about the making of Stephen Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along, which happened in 1981 and flopped.
It flopped. Uh-huh. But when you put together a musical, the chances of it flopping are very, very high. Yeah. And this is a story about a musical that failed. It seems to have a number of actors that we know.
Yeah, a lot of familiar faces in there that have moved on in the last 35 years.
I don't know if they've moved on. They're still wondering why this failed.
They've had fine careers other than this musical, Merrily We Roll Along. So I think that they're okay.
When we were watching the preview for this, the trailer, all I could think of is Bill Murray's character in Saturday Night Live.
This could be a satire.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, it just seems ripe for satire.
That's the musical theater, man. It's some of that stuff is real and some of it is real silly. And you can make something out of it.
Dun, 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 dun. Right.
Brings us to our book of the week, and you've been reading Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
All right, so I've got to be very clear on this. Yes, I've been reading Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, part 1 and 2.
Can say.
Now, you got this book.
I borrowed it.
You borrowed it, and it sat in the car.
And for 2 weeks, and then Deb, our listener who lent it to me, said, can I have that book back? And I said, yeah, it's in the trunk.
Now, this was released earlier this summer, I think it was. And I got it when it was first released, and I started reading it. And I think I got through half of it before I had to switch over to something else.
And to be clear, this is not a novel. This is a script for the stage play.
And it is. It is truly a script for the stage play. And I kept thinking, oh, this would be great to have a group of us sit around and we all take a part and we kind of get through it and stuff like that. Well, the first page of this book says, there will be no public performances, no private performances. I mean, I just immediately said, oh, this would be great, like for Halloween, some, you know, group gets together and they act it out, you know, basically reading it out loud. Oh, no.
Somebody will produce that and we will be able to buy it from somebody.
Well, there's not even a book on tape of this.
Right.
Which is the reason why I'll go ahead and say I have not finished this.
I love audio dramas. I think that this is ripe for that. I think that J.K. Rowling and whatever publishers are involved could certainly put that out for us.
But they're not going to now.
Until the stage play.
In fact, it's going to be on Broadway maybe next year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've already got the London performance going on and it's doing quite well. So far, I've enjoyed it. This is the story of Harry Potter's son who doesn't feel quite up to, you know, basically I've got a teenager and you've got teenagers and somehow they don't always have the respect for the parents' accomplishments on the level.
They sometimes stand in the shadow of the accomplishments of their parents, and they sometimes react against those.
We're dealing with Draco Malfoy's son. And Draco, if you remember, was always the antagonist to Harry Potter, at least early on. Mm-hmm. Not giving away everything. But later on, they came to an arrangement on how they would work together. But my point being is that this is the story of them. And about how they feel about stuff. I'm going to leave it at that because I've enjoyed it. This was written partly by J.K. Rowling, but really it had a different writer, and it was made for theater. So all I can say is I look forward to seeing it, and I will look forward to finishing it.
There you go. Harry Potter, the Next Generation. Make exactly. It so.
That's right. This one stars Riker.
Nice. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. It's available in bookstores. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. Brings us to our appetizer app of the week, and I've been playing all week long with my new assistant. My Google assistant arrived last week in the shape of my Google Home unit that I have sitting in my family room, and I can ask Google anything I want, and most of the time it will do what I'm asking.
It's the ghost from Ork, right? Mork from Ork?
Oh my god, it's the ghost from Ork. I now love it even more. You have made it even better.
Nanu, nanu.
I want to subscribe to your newsletter. The Google Home is a connected Bluetooth speaker that has Google Assistant built in. Okay. So if I have something on my phone or on my computer that I want to play louder, I can send it, beam it, Chromecast it over to this unit, and it will play, and the sound is pretty good for a small unit.
It sounds great. It sounds, you would probably say it like a Beat Pill or a maybe the Bose little...
It is on the level with the Bose Bluetooth speakers, yes.
Sure. So it's got a nice bassy sound to it, and it's great for listening to certain podcasts.
Yes. If you say the words, "Okay, Google, play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling Podcast," I hope all of your Google Homes just started up, just like my phone just did. Good job. You can hear all of the things that are on Google Play Music, including our show. And it's a really great way to move data from your phone, from your little screen to your big screen. I have a Chromecast on my big screen so I can see my YouTube.
So Steve, his sort of den area is set up as his laboratory. He's got the
whole house is, to be fair.
He's got the light bulbs that are connected to the Google Home. Orb from Orc.
So I can make my lights turn on and off with my voice, which
turn on lights.
That was a big part of my decision to buy this unit.
And that's why he knows it's a ghost, because what he can do is his wife can be downstairs watching something, and all of a sudden, Steve has turned on the lights.
And be totally annoyed by Steve turning on the lights, yes.
Then turning them off.
The wife has certainly not gotten into the idea of having this unit with a microphone in our home, and she's not a big fan of it, but I really think that part of the future of computing is that Star Trek idea of talking to your computer.
Steve's ability to turn on the scary movie when his wife falls asleep on the couch downstairs. And have it scream.
I think I did accidentally do that last week. This
maybe
is great.
There's many fun things you can do with this.
Yeah. This is the competitor to Amazon's Echo, which has Alexa built in. And it, as far as I've been told from everybody who has one of those, this is very similar in its usefulness. I think Google is going to be able to build a lot more abilities into their Google Home and their Google Assistant in the future.
But will they be able to send you Tide detergent on demand?
I think they can send me some stuff. I have drunk the Kool-Aid on Google, and I'm ready.
All right, Jim Jones.
That's right. Brings us to our Now the News, and the cable companies are doing some things. DirecTV is going to show us their new thing. It's called DirecTV Now sometime in November, and it is an internet-only TV service.
An internet-only TV service for $35 a month.
$35 a month. It's going to have over 100 different channels, and it's a real competitor for the space that Hulu is occupying right now. I pay for Hulu at $12 a month, and I get all my NBC, Fox, and ABC shows that way because I don't have cable, but I'm missing all those other channels. So if I upped it from $12 to $35, I could get access to all those cable channels.
What is interesting about it is whether you'll be able to get it on demand, like a show on demand.
That's the idea.
It is.
It's a 72-hour replay. So anything that was on within the last 72 hours, you have access to.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, so it's DVR-ish, not full DVR.
Correct.
This is very interesting. This is an interesting play. Now, I have DirecTV. Mm-hmm. I also use AT&T for my cell phone service and my internet service. And I can tell you all in, probably what you're paying for internet service and for some subscriptions, you're probably paying around the same amount I'm paying.
But you also have some subscriptions. You also have Netflix.
I have Netflix.
And Amazon Prime.
I do.
So the math but works out.
But I got Prime not for the entertainment value.
I agree.
I got Prime
for the shipping. And then they give you the cherry on top, which is the entertainment, the movies, and all the exclusives that they're now creating.
Absolutely. And they've been wonderful, and it's awesome to have. This is interesting. I think there will be a number of people who will consider having this.
I am considering it as a non-cable subscriber.
Sure, sure. And it will run and run well. I also have, since I have AT&T phone service through the traditional DirecTV, I have an app, and I can watch anything I want to. Mm-hmm. Without pulling data, by the way.
Right.
So anyway, they're starting to make it the decisions a little more challenging.
Yes, they are. In fact, to add to the decision making, if you sign up for 3 months through DirecTV now, they're going to send you a free Apple TV. So that 3 months at $35 a month, you pretty much pay for that Apple TV.
Sure. And the thing we also should mention is, you know, back in July there was an article basically talking about how much we are watching many of these cable channels.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a tremendous amount of inventory of that 100 channels that very few people are watching, if they're watching at all. There is a subgroup of a subgroup of a subgroup.
And so maybe, and you're paying for them if you're paying for cable.
So let's just say there is an art station out there that has interest in making grass masks or something like that. There's probably a channel for that.
Rift Tracks needs its own channel. I think that's what you're getting at. Isn't all the time. Pluto.tv is my MST3K channel. I can watch MST3K on Pluto.tv app anytime. But yeah, there's so many channels mm-hmm. on the cable that those of you who are paying for cable, you're paying for the full buffet. That's what our friends over at Cord Killers like to say. The full buffet is $100 a month, or you can get a la carte like I do and get this app and that app and that app. Does it add up to the same amount? Maybe it does. If I'm getting what I want, is that okay?
Sure. It seems like the $35 a month on top of your cable, then you're going to have to start, you know, really recrunching those numbers.
Yeah, I think I would have to get rid of Hulu if this came to be mm-hmm. a part of my home, because that would replace my access to those Hulu shows.
Sure. All right, so if you are a Cubs fan, there's big news this week.
Everyone's a Cubs fan. The Cubs won the World Series, Chip.
I heard that. I heard that was going on here in Chicago. Only the largest group of in history of mankind.
That's all I kept saying all week.
Not the largest. One of the top 10.
One of the top
large.
10. Yeah, all week, that's all I kept saying to everyone was, hey, everybody, good news. The Cubs won the World Series.
We've landed on the moon.
Go Cubs Go is their current big song that the Cub fans love to play, and it has reached the Billboard charts for the first time.
Well, there you go. The song was released in, what, 84?
1984, yep.
And so between that time and now, it is now on the Billboard.
Now it's on the Billboard charts.
Just like another song that you liked so much from a few years ago.
The Super Bowl Shuffle, which we did hit the Billboard charts when the Chicago Bears won their championship in February of 1986. That peaked at number 41 on the Billboard charts.
That's right. You can do like a Casey Kasem, like read this sad letter.
Keep reaching for the stars.
Let's keep feet on the ground.
That's good stuff.
All right. So if we're going to watch some television, say in February, what is the must-watch TV?
I'm not sure this falls under must-watch TV.
Yes, it does.
But ESPN has been giving us these documentaries, these 30 for 30 documentaries for a few years now, and they're really good. The one that they're going to roll out for February 2017 is the story of the 2001 failed XFL Football League.
XFL we have Vince McMahon's league.
Vince McMahon and NBC were going to split the profits on this 50-50. It was half NBC and half wrestling. And it was supposed to be the alternative to the National Football League.
Well, it took place in the spring, didn't it?
It used all those facilities that were not being used because National Football League was over.
And all the teams had X's in their name, like Maniacs, right? With X's. X.
I love this. I love the idea of the underdog sports. You know, I was the mascot for the Chicago Rush for 10 years when the Arena Football League was here in Chicago.
And you used the nickname, He Hate Me, right?
Right. I should have. That would have been a brilliant move. That was Rod Smart.
If somebody could do that, was a big deal, is that on the back of your jersey, you didn't have to put your name.
You could put whatever you want on the back of your jersey, and Rod Smart decided he was going to put the words, "He hate me," on the back of his jersey, and that became the symbol of the XFL.
A little bit of XS with lots of X's.
All right.
XXX.
Yeah. You're fired. Yeah. Vince McMahon is such an over-the-top character, and he makes such an over-the-top product. The XFL was that for football, and it was fun to watch. They didn't make a go of it. They only played the one season. It didn't work out really well. But there's seven players from the XFL who went on to play in the NFL championship game.
That's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And this should be a fun documentary. ESPN 30 for 30s are always entertaining.
And an entertaining subject like Vince McMahon is always going to be entertaining.
My hope is they'll do one on him one day because, I mean, he is a fascinating guy too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when he's not taking a chair to his back. Yes!
Opie and Anthony were the announcers for the XFL League.
Good
and,
Lord.
And they always tell the story about when Vince McMahon brought them into his office and told him, "You're fired." And the voice of Vince McMahon is absolutely iconic. I love that story. So, you know, the world is here. We're going to be all right. We have a new president. He's going to take office in January, and everything's going to be fine, folks.
We'll still be around, I think.
I think we have enough information to survive another presidency.
Only if we can come back next presidency.
That's right. Everything's fine. Don't look back there. It's fine.
We're gonna have a good time. Anyway, we have a transfer of power. Obama and Trump have already met. They've set up their transition. He's gonna be naming his cabinet soon. What can I say? The world moves forward.
That's right. Everything is awesome. There's going to be a Lego movie. There's going to be Star Wars.
That's right. In February, the Batman movie comes out.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited about the next Lego
movie.
I'm
seeing a few different.
There's so many great lines.
The Joker sitting with a quivering lip because he wants to be the number one bad guy.
We'll talk more about the Lego movie in February when that comes out. But there's so many things to look forward to. You have so much information out there. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week.
That's right. If you need more information, there's so many ways to find it. You can give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Send us an email. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and Google Play Music through your Google Home unit. And you can find all the news that you need every day of the week at our news site, news.TooMuchScrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasenflug.
We'll see you in the future.